Vrind, wondering why in the world a people who lived in a tropical lowland preferred heated teas. After a few minutes, his life sense warned him that he was being watched. Eventually, that same sense alerted him that someone was approaching. Vasher slipped his dagger from his belt with his free hand as he sipped. The priest sat down opposite Vasher in the booth. He wore street clothing, rather than religious robes. However, perhaps unconsciously, he had still chosen to wear the white and green of his deity. Vasher slipped his dagger back into its sheath, masking the sound by taking a loud sip. The priest, Bebid, looked about nervously. He had enough of a breath aura to indicate that he'd reached the first tightening. It was where most people, those who could afford to buy breath, stopped. That much breath would extend their lifespan by a good decade or so and give them an increased life sense. It would also let them see breath auras and distinguish other awakeners, and, in a pinch, let them do a little awakening themselves. A decent trade for spending enough money to feed a peasant family for 50 years. "Well?" Vasher asked. Bebid actually jumped at the sound. Vasher sighed, closing his eyes. The priest wasn't accustomed to these kinds of clandestine meetings. He wouldn't have come at all had Vasher not exerted certain pressures on him. Vasher opened his eyes, staring at the priest as the waiter arrived with 2 plates of spiced rice. Tech Tree's food was the restaurant's specialty. The Halandrin liked foreign spices as much as they liked odd colors. Vasher had placed the order earlier, along with a payment that would keep the surrounding booths empty. "Well?" Vasher repeated. Bebid said. "I don't know. I haven't been able to find out much." Vasher regarded the man with a stern stare. "You have to give me more time."
"Remember your indiscretions, friend," Vasher said, drinking the last of his tea, feeling a twinge of annoyance. "Wouldn't want news of those getting out, would we?"
he said, thinking,
"Do we have to go through this again?"
Bebid was quiet for a time.
"You don't know what you're asking, Vasher,"
he said, leaning in.
"I'm a priest of Bright Vision the True. I can't betray my oaths."
"Good thing I'm not asking you to."
"We're not supposed to release information about court politics."
"Bah!"
Vasher snapped. "Those returned can't so much as look at one another without half the city learning about it within the hour."
"Surely you're not implying," Bebid said.
Vasher gritted his teeth, bending his spoon with his finger in annoyance.
"Enough, Bebid. We both know that your oaths are all just part of the game."
He leaned in.
"And I really hate games."
Bebid paled and didn't touch his meal. Vasher eyed his spoon with annoyance, then bent it back, calming himself. He shoveled in a spoonful of rice, mouth burning from the spices. He didn't believe in letting food sit around uneaten. You never knew when you'd have to leave in a hurry.
"There have been rumors," Bebid finally said.
"This goes beyond simple court politics, Vasher. Beyond games played between gods. This is something very real and very quiet. Quiet enough that even observant priests only hear hints of it."
Vasher continued to eat.
"There is a faction of the court pushing to attack Idris," Bebid said, "though I can't fathom why." "Don't be an idiot," Vasher said, wishing he had more tea to wash down the rice. "We both know Halandrin has sound reasons to slaughter every person up in those highlands."
"Royals," Bebid said.
Vasher nodded. They were called rebels, but those rebels were the true Halandrin royal family. Mortal men, though they might be, their bloodline was a challenge to the court of gods. Any good monarch knew that the first thing you did to stabilize your throne was execute anyone who had a better claim to it than you did. After that, it was usually a good idea to execute everyone who thought they might have claim.
So, Vasher said, you fight. Halandrin wins. What's the problem?
It's a bad idea. That's the problem, Bebid said. A terrible idea. Kalad's phantoms, man. Idris won't go easily, no matter what people in the court say. This won't be like squashing that fool Var. The Idrians have allies from across the mountains, and the sympathies of dozens of kingdoms. What some are calling a simple quelling of rebel factions could easily spin into another many-war. Do you want that? Thousands upon thousands dead. Kingdoms falling to never rise again. All so we can grab a little bit of frozen land nobody really wants.
The trade passes are valuable,
Vasher noted. Bebid snorted.
The Idrians aren't foolish enough to raise their tariffs too high. This isn't about money. It's about fear. People in the court talk about what might happen if the Idrians cut off the passes, or what may happen if the Idrians let enemies slip through and besiege Teteller. If this were about money, we'd never go to war. Halandrin thrives on its dye and textiles trade. You think that business would boom in war? We'd be lucky not to suffer a full economic collapse.
And you assume that I care about Halidrin's economic well-being?
Vasher asked.
Ah, yes, Bebid said dryly. I forgot who I was talking to. What do you want, then? Tell me, so we can get this over with.
Tell me about the rebels,
Vasher said, chewing on rice.
The Idrians? We just talked.
Not them, Vasher said. The ones in the city.
They're unimportant now that Var is dead,
the priest said with a wave of his hand.
Nobody knows who killed him, by the way. Probably the rebels themselves. Guess they didn't appreciate his getting himself captured, eh?
Vasher said nothing.
Is that all you want?
Bebid said impatiently.
I need to contact the factions you mentioned,
Vasher said.
The ones who are pushing for war against Idris.
I won't help you enrage the... Do not presume to tell me what to do, Bebid. Just give me the information you promised, and you can be free of all this.
Vasher,
Bebid said, leaning in even further.
I can't help. My lady isn't interested in these kinds of politics, and I move in the wrong circles.
Vasher ate some more, judging the man's sincerity.
All right. Who, then?
Bebid relaxed, using his napkin to wipe his brow.
I don't know, he said.
Maybe one of Mercy Star's priests? You could also try Bluefingers, I suppose.
Bluefingers? That's an odd name for a god.
Bluefingers isn't a god,
Bebid said, chuckling.
That's just a nickname. He's the high place steward, head of the scribes. He pretty much keeps the court running. If anyone knows anything about this faction, it will be him. Of course, he's so stiff and straight, you'll have a hard time breaking him.
You'd be surprised,
Vasher said, shoveling the last bit of rice into his mouth.
I got you, didn't I?
I suppose.
Vasher stood.
Pay the waiter when you leave,
he said, grabbing his cloak off its peg and wandering out. He could feel a darkness to his right. He walked down the street, then turned down an alley, where he found Nightblood, still sheathed, sticking from the chest of the thief who had stolen him. Another cutpurse lay dead on the alley floor. Vasher pulled the sword free, then snapped the sheath closed. It had only been opened a fraction of an inch, and did up the clasp.
You lost your temper in there for a bit,
Nightblood said, with a chastising tone. I thought you were going to work on that.
Guess I'm relapsing, Vasher thought. Nightblood paused. I don't think you ever really unlapsed in the first place.
That's not a word, Vasher said, leaving the alley.
So?
Nightblood said.
You're too worried about words. That priest, you spent all those words on him, then you just let him go. It's not really how I would have handled the situation.
Yes, I know, Vasher said. Your way would have involved making several more corpses.
Well, I am a sword, Nightblood said with a mental huff. Might as well stick to what you're good at.
Lightsong sat on his patio, watching his new queen's carriage pull up to the palace.
Well, this has been a pleasant day, he remarked to his high priest.
A few cups of wine, along with some time to get past thinking about children deprived of their breath, and he was beginning to feel more like his usual self.
You're that happy to have a queen? Larimar asked.
I'm that happy to have avoided petitions for the day, thanks to her arrival. What do we know about her?
Not much, Your Grace, Larimar said, standing beside Lightsong's chair and looking toward the God King's palace. The Idrians surprised us by not sending the eldest daughter as planned. They sent the youngest in her stead.
Interesting, Lightsong said, accepting another cup of wine from one of his servants.
She's only 17 years old, Larimar said. I can't imagine being married to the God King at her age.
I can't imagine you being married to the God King at any age, Scoot, Lightsong said. Then he pointedly cringed. Actually, yes, I can imagine it, and the dress looks painfully inelegant on you. Make a note to have my imagination flogged for its insolence in showing me that particular sight.
I'll put it in line right behind your sense of decorum, Your Grace,
Larimar said dryly. Don't be silly, Lightsong said, taking a sip of wine. I haven't had one of those in years.
He leaned back, trying to decide what the Idrians were signaling by sending the wrong princess. Two potted palms waved in the wind, and Lightsong was distracted by the scent of salt on the incoming sea breeze.
I wonder if I sailed that sea once, he thought. A man of the ocean? Is that how I died? Is that why I dreamed of a ship?
He could only vaguely remember that dream now. A red sea. Fire. Death. Killing and battle. He was shocked as he suddenly remembered his dream in starker, more vivid detail. The sea had been red as it reflected the magnificent city of Teteller, engulfed in flames. He could almost hear people crying out in pain. He could nearly hear... what? Soldiers marching and fighting in the streets? Lightsong shook his head, trying to dispel the phantom memories. The ship he'd seen in his dream had been burning, too, he now remembered. It didn't have to mean anything. Everyone had nightmares. But it made him uncomfortable to know that his nightmares were seen as prophetic omens. Larimar was still standing beside Lightsong's chair, watching the God King's palace.
Oh, sit down and stop looming over me, Lightsong said. You're making the buzzards jealous.
Larimar raised an eyebrow. And which buzzards would those be, Your Grace?
The ones who keep pushing for us to go to war, Lightsong said, waving a hand.
The priest sat down on one of the patio's wooden recliners and relaxed as he sat, removing the bulky mitre from his head. Underneath, Larimar's dark hair was plastered to his head with sweat. He ran his hand through it. During the first few years, Larimar had remained stiff and formal at all times. Eventually, however,
Lightsong had worn him down. After all, Lightsong was the god. In his opinion, if he could lounge on the job, then so could his priests.
"I don't know, Your Grace,"
Larimar said slowly, rubbing his chin.
"I don't like this."
"The Queen's arrival?" Lightsong asked. Larimar nodded.
"We haven't had a queen in the court for some 30 years. I don't know how the factions will deal with her."
Lightsong rubbed his forehead. "Politics, Larimar? You know I frown on such things." Larimar eyed him.
"Your Grace, you are, by default, a politician." "Don't remind me, please. I should very well like to extract myself from the situation. Do you think, perhaps, I could bribe one of the other gods to take control of my lifeless commands?"
"I doubt that would be wise," Larimar said. "It's all part of my master plan to ensure that I become totally and redundantly useless to this city by the time I die. Again." Larimar cocked his head.
"Redundantly useless?"
"Of course. Regular uselessness wouldn't be enough. I am, after all, a god." He took a handful of grapes from a servant's tray, still trying to dismiss his dream's disturbing images. They didn't mean anything, just dreams. Even so, he decided he would tell Larimar about them the next morning. Perhaps Larimar would use the dreams to help push for peace with Idris. Since old Dedelin hadn't sent his firstborn daughter, it would mean more debates in the court, more talk of war. This princess's arrival should have settled it, but he knew that the war hawks among the gods wouldn't let the issue die.
"Still," Larimar said, as if talking to himself, "they did send someone. That is a good sign, surely. An outright refusal would have meant war for certain."
"And whoever certain is, I doubt we should have a war for him," Lightsong said idly, inspecting a grape. "War is, in my divine opinion, even worse than politics."
"Some say the two are the same, Your Grace."
"Nonsense. War is far worse, at least where politics is going on. There are usually nice hors d'oeuvres."
As usual, Larimar ignored Lightsong's witty remarks. Lightsong would have been offended if he hadn't known there were 3 separate lesser priests standing at the back of the patio, recording his words, searching for wisdom and meaning within them.
"What will the Idrian rebels do now, do you think?" Larimar asked.
"Here's the thing, Scoot," Lightsong said, leaning back, closing his eyes and feeling the sun on his face. "The Idrians don't consider themselves to be rebels. They're not sitting up in their hills waiting for the day when they can return in triumph to Halandrin. This isn't their home anymore."
"Those peaks are hardly a kingdom."
"They're enough of a kingdom to control the area's best mineral deposits, 4 vital passes to the north, and the original royal line of the original Halandrin dynasty. They don't need us, my friend."
"And the talk of Idrian dissidents in the city, ones rousing the people against the court of gods?"
"Rumors only," Lightsong said. "Though, when I'm proven wrong and the underprivileged masses storm my palace and burn me at the stake, I'll be sure to inform them that you were right all along. You'll get the last laugh, or, well, the last scream, since you'll probably be tied up beside me."
Larimar sighed, and Lightsong opened his eyes to find the priest regarding him with a contemplative expression. The priest didn't chastise Lightsong for his levity. Larimar just reached down, putting his headdress back on. He was the priest. Lightsong was the god. There would be no questioning of motives, no rebukes. If Lightsong gave an order, they would all do exactly as he said. Sometimes, that terrified him.
but not this day. He was instead annoyed. The Queen's arrival had somehow gotten him talking about politics, and the day had been going so well until then.
"More wine," Lightsong said, raising his cup.
"You can't get drunk, Your Grace," Larimar noted. "Your body is immune to all toxins."
"I know," Lightsong said, as a lesser servant filled his cup. "But trust me, I'm quite good at pretending."
Chapter 6 Ciri stepped from the carriage. Immediately, dozens of servants in blue and silver swarmed around her, pulling her away. Ciri turned, alarmed, looking back toward her soldiers. The men stepped forward, but Trelides held up his hand.
"The vessel will go alone,"
the priest declared. Ciri felt a stab of fear. This was the time.
"Return to Idris," she said to the men.
"But my lady,"
the lead soldier said.
"No," Ciri said. "You can do nothing more for me here. Please, return and tell my father that I arrived safely."
The lead soldier glanced back at his men, uncertain. Ciri didn't get to see if they obeyed or not, for the servants shuffled her around a corner into a long black hallway. Ciri tried not to show her fear. She'd come to the palace to be wed, and was determined to make a favorable impression on the God King. But she really was just terrified. Why hadn't she run? Why hadn't she wiggled out of this somehow? Why couldn't they have all just let her be? There was no escape now. As the serving women led her down a corridor into the deep black palace, the last remnants of her former life disappeared behind her. She was now alone. Lamps with colored glass lined the walls. Ciri was led through several twists and turns in the dark passages. She tried to remember her way back, but was soon hopelessly lost. The servants surrounded her like an honor guard. Though all were female, they were of different ages. Each wore a blue cap, hair loose out the back, and they kept their eyes downcast. Their shimmering blue clothing was loose-fitting, even through the bust. Ciri blushed at the low-cut fronts. In Idris, women kept even their necks covered. The black corridor eventually opened into a much larger room. Ciri hesitated in the doorway. While the stone walls of this room were black, they had been draped in silks of a deep maroon. In fact, everything in the room was maroon, from the carpeting to the furniture to the tubs, surrounded by tile in the center of the room. The servants began to pick at her clothing, undressing her. Ciri jumped, swatting at a few hands, causing them to pause in surprise. Then they attacked with renewed vigor, and Ciri realized that she didn't have a choice except to grit her teeth and bear the treatment. She raised her arms, letting the servants pull off her dress and underclothing, and felt her hair grow red as she blushed. At least the room was warm. She shivered anyway. She was forced to stand, naked, as other servants approached, bearing measuring tapes. They poked and prodded, getting various measurements, including ones around Ciri's waist, bust, shoulders, and hips. When that was finished, the women backed away, and the room fell still. The bath continued to steam in the center of the chamber. Several of the serving women gestured toward it.
"Guess I'm allowed to wash myself,"
Ciri thought with relief, walking up the tile steps. She stepped carefully into the massive tub and was pleased at how warm the water was. She lowered herself into the water, letting herself relax just a fraction. Soft splashes sounded behind her, and she spun. Several other serving women, these wearing brown, were climbing into the tub, fully clothed, holding washcloths and soap. Ciri sighed, yielding herself to their care as they began to scrub vigorously at her body and hair. She closed her eyes, enduring the treatment with as much dignity as she could manage. That left her time to think, which wasn't good. It only allowed her to consider just what was happening to her. Her anxiety immediately returned.
"The lifeless weren't as bad as the stories," she thought,
trying to reassure herself, and the city colors are far more pleasant than I expected. Maybe. Maybe the God King isn't as terrible as everyone says.
Ah, good, a voice said. We're right on schedule. Perfect.
Ciri froze. That was a man's voice. She snapped her eyes open to find an older man in brown robes standing beside the tub, writing something on a ledger. He was balding and had a round, pleasant face. A young boy stood next to him, bearing extra sheets of paper and a small jar of ink for the man to use in dipping his quill. Ciri screamed, startling several of her servants, as she moved with a sudden splashing motion, covering herself with her arms. The man with the ledger hesitated, looking down.
Is something wrong, Vessel?
I'm bathing, she snapped.
Yes, the man said. I believe I can tell that.
Well, why are you watching?
The man cocked his head. But I'm a royal servant, far beneath your station, he said, then trailed off. Ah, yes. Idrian sensibilities. I had forgotten. Ladies, please splash around, make some more bubbles in the bath.
The serving women did as asked, churning up an abundance of foam in the soapy water.
There, the man said, turning back to his ledger. I can't see a thing. Now, let us get on with this. It wouldn't do to keep the God King waiting on his wedding day.
Ciri reluctantly allowed the bathing to continue, though she was careful to keep certain bits of anatomy well beneath the water. The women worked furiously, scrubbing so hard that Ciri was half afraid they'd rub her skin right off.
As you might guess, the man said, we're on a very tight schedule. There's much to do, and I would like this all to go as smoothly as possible.
Ciri frowned. And who exactly are you? The man glanced at her, causing her to duck down beneath the suds a little more. Her hair was as bright a red as it had ever been.
My name is Haverseth, but everyone just calls me Blue Fingers.
He held up a hand and wiggled the fingers, which were all stained dark with blue ink from writing.
I am head scribe and steward to His Excellent Grace Sesebron, God King of Halandrin. In simpler terms, I manage the palace attendants and oversee all servants in the court of gods.
He paused, eyeing her.
I also make certain that everyone stays on schedule and does what they are supposed to.
Some of the younger girls, wearing brown, like the ones bathing Ciri, began bringing pitchers of water to the side of the tub, and the women used these to rinse Ciri's hair. She turned about to let them, though she tried to keep a waterlogged eye on Bluefingers and his serving boy.
Now, Bluefingers said, the palace tailors are working very quickly on your gown. We had a good estimate of your size, but final measurements were necessary to complete the process. We should have the garment ready for you in a short time.
The serving women doused Ciri's head again.
There are some things we need to discuss,
Bluefingers continued, voice distorted by the water in Ciri's ears.
I presume you have been taught the proper method of treating His Immortal Majesty.
Ciri glanced at him, then looked away. She probably had been taught, but she didn't remember. And either way, she wasn't in a frame of mind to concentrate.
Ah, Bluefinger said, apparently reading her expression. Well then, this could be interesting. Allow me to give you some suggestions.
Ciri nodded.
First, please understand that the God King's will is law. He needs no reason or justification for what he does. Your life, like all of our lives, is in his hands. Second, please understand that the God King doesn't speak with people such as you or me. You will not talk to him when you go to him. Do you understand?
Ciri spit out a bit of soapy water. You mean I'm not even to be able to speak to my husband?
I'm afraid not, Bluefinger said. None of us can.
Then how does he make judgments and rulings? She asked, wiping her eyes.
The Council of Gods handles the kingdom's more mundane needs,
Blue Fingers explained.
The God King is above the day-to-day governance. When it is necessary for him to communicate, he gives his judgments to his priests, who then reveal them to the world.
Great, Ciri thought.
It is unconventional that you are allowed to touch him,
Blue Fingers continued.
Fathering a child is a necessary encumbrance for him. It is our job to present you in as pleasing a way as possible, and to avoid, at all costs, irritating him.
Astra, god of colors, she thought. What kind of creature is this?
Blue Fingers eyed her. I know something of your temperament, Vessel, he said. We have, of course, researched the children of the Idrian monarchy. Allow me to be a little more personal, and perhaps a little more direct than I would prefer. If you speak directly to the God King, he will order you executed. Unlike your father, he isn't a man of patience. I cannot stress this point enough. I realize that you are accustomed to being a very important person. Indeed, you still are that important, if not more so. You are far above myself and these others. However, as far as you are above us, the God King is even farther above you. His Immortal Majesty is special. The doctrines teach that the earth itself is too base for him. He is one who achieved transcendence before he was even born, but then returned to bring his people blessings and visions. You are being given a special trust. Please, do not betray it. And please, please, do not provoke his anger. Do you understand?
Ciri nodded slowly, feeling her hair bleach back to white. She tried to steel herself, but what courage she could gather felt like a sham. No, she wasn't going to be able to stomach this creature as easily as the lifeless or the city colors. His reputation in Idris wasn't exaggerated. In a short time, he was going to take her body and do with it as he wished. Part of her felt a rage at that, but it was the rage of frustration, the rage that came from knowing that something horrible was coming, and from being unable to do anything at all about it. The serving women backed away from her, leaving her half-floating in the soapy water. One of the servants looked to Blue Fingers and nodded her head in respect.
Ah, finished, are we? He asked. Excellent. You and your ladies are efficient as always, Jalan. Let us proceed, then.
Can't they speak?
Ciri asked quietly.
Of course they can, Blue Finger said. But they are dedicated servants of His Immortal Majesty. During their hours of service, their duty is to be as useful as possible without being distracting. Now, if you'll continue...
Ciri stayed in the water, even when the silent women tried to pull her out. Blue Fingers turned around with a sigh, putting his back to her. He reached over and turned the serving boy around as well. Ciri finally allowed herself to be led out of the bath. The wet women left her, walking into a side room, probably to change. And several others led Ciri toward a smaller tub for rinsing. She stepped down into the water, which was much colder than the other bath, and gasped. The women motioned for her to dunk, and she cringed, but did so, cleaning off most of the soap. After that, there was a final third tub. As Ciri approached, shivering, she could smell strong floral scents coming from it.
What's this? Ciri asked.
Perfumed bath, Blue Finger said, still turned away. If you prefer, you may have one of the palace masseuses rub perfume onto your body instead. I advise against that, however, considering time restraints.
Ciri blushed, imagining anyone, male or female, rubbing her body with perfume.
This will be fine, she said, climbing down into the water.
It was lukewarm, and the floral scents were so strong that she had to breathe through her mouth. The women motioned downward, and, sighing, Ciri dunked beneath the scented water. After that, she climbed out and several women finally approached with fluffy towels. They began to pat Ciri down, their touch as delicate and soft as the previous scrubbing had been hard. This took away some of the strong scent, for which Ciri was glad. Other women approached with a deep blue robe, and she extended her arms, allowing them to put it on her, then tie it shut.
"You may turn around," she told the steward.
"Excellent," Bluefinger said, doing so. He strode toward a door at the side of the room, waving for her. "Quickly now, we still have much to do." Ciri and the serving women followed, leaving the maroon room for one that was decorated in bright yellows. It held a lot more furniture, no bath, and a large plush chair in the center of the room.
"His Majesty is associated with no single hue," Bluefinger said, waving to the bright colors of the room as the women led Ciri to the plush chair. "He represents all colors and each of the iridescent tones. Therefore, each room is decorated with a different shade."
Ciri sat, and the women began to work on her nails. Another tried to brush out the snarls that had come from the hearty washing. Ciri frowned.
"Just cut it off," she said.
They hesitated.
"Vessel?"
one asked.
"Cut off the hair," she said.
Bluefingers gave the permission, and a few snips later, her hair was in a bunch on the floor. Then Ciri closed her eyes and focused. She wasn't certain how she did it. The royal locks had always been part of her life. Altering them was like moving any other muscle to her, if more difficult. In a few moments, she was able to get the hair to grow. Several women gasped softly as the hair sprouted from Ciri's head and moved down to her shoulders. Growing it made her feel hungry and tired, but it was better than letting the women fight snarls. Finished, she opened her eyes. Bluefingers was watching her with an inquisitive expression, his ledger held loosely in his fingers.
"That is fascinating," he said. "The royal locks. We have waited quite some time for them to grace the palace again, Vessel. You can change the color at will?"
"Yes," Ciri said.
"Some of the time, at least," she thought.
"Is it too long?"
"Long hair is seen as a sign of beauty in Halandrin, my lady," Bluefinger said. "I know you keep it bound up in Idris, but here, flowing hair is favored by many of the women, particularly the goddesses."
Part of her wanted to keep the hair short just out of spite, but she was beginning to realize that such an attitude could get her killed in Halandrin. Instead, she closed her eyes and focused again. The hair had been shoulder length, but she extended it for several minutes, making it grow until it would reach all the way down her back once she stood. Ciri opened her eyes.
"Beautiful,"
one of the younger serving women whispered, then flushed, immediately returning to her work on Ciri's toenails.
"Very nice," Bluefingers agreed. "I will leave you here. I have a few things to deal with, but will return shortly."
Ciri nodded as he left, and several women moved in and began to apply makeup. Ciri suffered it pensively, others still working on her nails and hair. This wasn't how she had imagined her wedding day. Marriage had always seemed distant to her, something that would only happen after spouses had been chosen for her siblings. When she'd been very young, in fact, she'd always said that she intended to raise horses instead of getting married. She'd grown out of that, but a part of her felt a longing for such simple times. She didn't want to be married. Not yet. She still felt like a child, even if her body had become that of a woman. She wanted to play in the hills and pick flowers and tease her father. She wanted time to experience more of life before she was forced into the responsibilities of childbearing. Fate had taken that opportunity away from her. Now she was faced by the imminent prospect of going to a man's bed, a man who wouldn't speak to her and who wouldn't care who she was or what she wanted. She knew the physical requirements of what would be involved. She could thank Mab, the cook, for some candid discussions on that point.
But emotionally, she just felt petrified. She wanted to run, hide, flee as far as she could. Did all women feel this way? Or was it only those who were being washed, primped, and sent to please a deity with the power to destroy nations? Blue Fingers eventually returned. Another person entered behind him. An elderly man in the blue and silver clothing Ciri was beginning to associate with those who served the God King.
But Blue Fingers wears brown, Ciri thought, frowning. Why is that?
Ah, I see that my timing is perfect, Blue Finger said as the women finished. They retreated to the sides of the room, heads bowed. Blue Fingers nodded to the elderly man. Vessel, this is one of the palace's healers. Before you are taken to the God King, you will need to be inspected to determine if you are a maiden and to ensure that you don't have certain diseases. It's really just a formality, but one that I'm afraid I must insist upon. In consideration of your bashfulness, I did not bring the young healer I had originally assigned to the job. I assume an older healer will make you more comfortable.
Ciri sighed, but nodded.
Blue Fingers gestured toward a padded table on the side of the room. Then he and his serving boy turned around. Ciri undid her robe and went to the table, lying down to continue what was proving to be the most embarrassing day of her life. It will only get worse, she thought, as the doctor did his examination. Sesebron, the God King. Awesome, terrible, holy, majestic. He had been stillborn, but had returned. What did that do to a man? Would he even be human? Or would he be some monster, terrible to behold? He was said to be eternal, but obviously his reign would end eventually. Otherwise he wouldn't need an heir. She shivered, wishing it could just be over with, but also grateful for anything that delayed matters for just a little longer, even something as humiliating as the doctor's prodding. That was soon done, however, and Ciri quickly did up her robe again, standing.
She is quite healthy, the healer said to Blue Fingers, and most likely still a maiden. She also has a very strong breath.
Ciri froze. How could he tell? And then she saw it. She had to look very closely, but the yellow floor around the surgeon looked a tad too bright. She felt herself pale, though the nervousness had already made her hair as white as it went. The doctor is an awakener, she thought. There is an awakener here, in this room, and he touched me.
She cringed, skin writhing. It was wrong to take the breath from another person. It was the ultimate in arrogance, the complete opposite of Idris' philosophy. Others in Halandrin simply wore bright colors to draw attention to themselves, but awakeners, they stole the life from human beings and used that to make themselves stand out. The perverted use of breath was one of the main reasons that the royal line had moved to the Highlands in the first place. Modern-day Halandrin existed on the basis of extorting the breath of its people. Ciri felt more naked now than she had when actually unclothed. What could this awakener tell about her, because of his unnatural life force? Was he tempted to steal Ciri's biochroma? She tried to breathe as shallowly as possible, just in case. Eventually, Blue Fingers and the terrible doctor left the room. The women approached to undo her robe once again, some bearing undergarments. He will be worse, she realized, the king. He's not just an awakener, he's returned. He needs to suck the breath from people in order to survive. Would he take away her breath? No, that won't happen, she told herself firmly. He needs me to provide him with an heir of the royal line. He won't risk the child's safety. He'll leave me my breath, if only until then. But what would happen to her when she was no longer needed?
Her attention was drawn away from such thoughts as several serving women approached with a large bundle of cloth. A dress? No, a gown. A gorgeous gown of blue and silver. Focusing on it seemed better than thinking about what the God King would do with her once she bore him a son. Ciri waited quietly as the women put it on her. The fabric was amazingly soft on her skin, the velvet smooth as petals from a highland flower. As the women adjusted it on her, she noticed that, oddly, it laced up the side instead of the back. It had an extremely long train and sleeves that were so long that if she put her arms down at the sides, the cuffs hung a good foot below her hands. It took several minutes for the women to get the ties done upright, the folds situated correctly, and the train even behind her. All this so that it can be taken off again in a few minutes, Ciri thought, with a detached sense of cold irony, as a woman approached with a mirror. Ciri froze. Where had all that color come from? The delicately red cheeks, the mysteriously dark eyes, the blue on the top of her eyelids, the deep red lips, the almost glowing skin. The gown shone silver upon blue, bulky yet beautiful, with ripples of deep velvet cloth. It was like nothing she'd seen in Idris. It was more amazing, even, than the colors she'd seen on the people in the city. Staring at herself in the mirror, Ciri was almost able to forget her worries. "Thank you," she whispered. That must have been the right response, for the serving women smiled, glancing at each other. Two took her hands, moving much more respectfully now than when they'd first rushed her from the carriage. Ciri strode with them, train rustling behind her, and the other women stayed behind. Ciri turned, and the women curtsied to her, one at a time, heads bowed. The last two, the ones leading her, opened a door, then gently pushed her out into the hallway beyond. They closed the door, leaving her. The hallway was of the deepest black. She'd almost forgotten how dark the stone walls of the palace were. The hallway was empty, save for Bluefingers, who stood waiting for her with his ledger. He smiled, bowing his head in respect. "The God King will be pleased, Vessel," he said. "We are exactly on time. The sun only just set." Ciri turned from Bluefingers. Directly across from her was a large, imposing door. It was plated entirely with gold. Four wall lamps shone without colored glass, and they reflected light off the gilded portal. She had no question as to who lay beyond such an impressive entrance. "This is the God King's sleeping chamber," Bluefinger said. "Rather, one of his sleeping chambers. Now, my lady, you must hear this again. Do nothing to offend the king. You are here at his sufferance, and are here to see to his needs. Not mine, not your own, and not even that of our kingdom."
"I understand," she said quietly, heart beating faster and faster.
"Thank you," Bluefinger said. "It is time to present yourself. Enter the room, then remove your dress and underclothing. Bow yourself to the ground before the king's bed, touching your head to the floor. When he wishes for you to approach, he will knock on the side post, and you may look up. He will then wave you forward." She nodded. "Just try not to touch him too much." Ciri frowned, clenching and unclenching her increasingly nervous hands.
"How exactly am I going to manage that? We're going to have sex, aren't we?"
Bluefingers flushed. "Yes, I guess you are. This is new ground for me too, my lady. The God King, well, only a group of specially dedicated servants are supposed to touch him. My suggestion would be to avoid kissing him, caressing him, or doing anything else that might offend him. Simply
Let him do to you what he wishes, and you should be safe.
Ciri took a deep breath, nodding.
When you are finished, Bluefinger said, the king will withdraw. Take the bed linens and burn them in the hearth. As the vessel, you are the only one allowed to handle such things. Do you understand?
Yes,
Ciri said, growing increasingly anxious.
Very well, then, Bluefinger said, looking almost as nervous as she was. Good luck.
With that, he reached forward and pushed the door open.
Oh, Astra, god of colors,
she thought, heart pounding, hands sweating, growing numb. Bluefingers pushed her lightly on the back, and she stepped into the room.
Chapter 7. The door shut behind her. A large fire growled in a hearth to her left, bringing a shifting orange light to the large room. The black walls seemed to draw in and absorb the illumination, making deep shadows at the edges of the room. Ciri stood quietly in her ornate velvet dress, heart thumping, brow sweating. To her right, she could make out a massive bed, with sheets and covers of black to match the rest of the room. The bed appeared unoccupied. Ciri peered into the darkness, eyes adjusting. The fire crackled, throwing a flicker of light across a large, throne-like chair sitting beside the bed. It was occupied by a figure wearing black, bathed in darkness. He watched her, eyes twinkling, unblinking in the firelight. Ciri gasped, casting her eyes downward, her heartbeat surging as she remembered Bluefinger's warnings.
Vivenna should be here instead of me, Ciri thought desperately. I can't deal with this. Father was wrong to send me.
She squeezed her eyes shut, her breathing coming more quickly. She worked shaking fingers and pulled nervously at the strings on the side of her dress. Her hands were slick with sweat. Was she taking too long to undress? Would he be angered? Would she be killed before even the first night was out? Would she, perhaps, prefer that?
No, she thought with determination. No, I need to do this. For Idris. For the fields and the children who took flowers from me. For my father and Mab and everyone else in the palace.
She finally got the strings undone, and the gown fell away with surprising ease. She could now see that it had been constructed with that goal in mind. She dropped the dress to the floor, then paused, looking at her undershift. The white fabric was throwing out a spectrum of colors, like light bent by a prism. She regarded this with shock, wondering what was causing the strange effect. It didn't matter. She was too nervous to think about that. Gritting her teeth, she forced herself to pull off her undershift, leaving her naked. She quickly knelt on the cold stone floor, curling up, heart thudding in her ears as she bowed with her forehead touching the floor. The room fell silent, save for the crackling hearth. The fire wasn't necessary in the Halandrin warmth, but she was glad for it, unclothed as she was. She waited, hair pure white, arrogance and stubbornness discarded, naked in more than one way. This was where she ended up. This was where all her independent sense of freedom came to an end. No matter what she claimed or how she felt, in the end, she had to bow to authority, just like anyone else. She gritted her teeth, imagining the God King sitting there, watching her be subservient and naked before him. She hadn't seen much of him, other than to notice his size. He was a good foot taller than most other men she'd seen, and was wider of shoulders and more powerful of build as well, more significant than other lesser men. He was returned. In and of itself, being returned wasn't a sin. After all, returned came in Idris, too. The Halandrin people, however, kept the returned alive, feeding them on the souls of peasants, tearing away the breath of hundreds of people each year. Don't think of that, Ciri told herself forcefully. Yet as she tried to clear her thoughts, the God King's eyes returned to her memory. Those black eyes, which had seemed to glow in the firelight. She could feel them on her still, watching her, as cold as the stones upon which she knelt. The fire crackled. Bluefingers had said that the king would knock for her. What if she missed it? She didn't dare glance upward. She'd already met his gaze once, if by accident. She couldn't risk upsetting him further. She just continued to kneel in place, elbows on the ground, back beginning to ache. Why doesn't he do something? Was he displeased with her? Was she not as pretty as he desired? Or was he angered that she'd met his eyes and then taken too long to undress? It would be particularly ironic if she offended him when trying so hard not to be her usual flippant self. Or was something else wrong? He had been promised the eldest daughter of the Idrian king, but had instead received Ciri. Would he know the difference? Would he even care? The minutes passed, the room growing darker as the fire consumed its logs. He's toying with me, Ciri thought, forcing me to wait on his whims. Making her kneel in such an uncomfortable position was probably a message, one that showed who was in power. He would take her when he willed it, and not before. Ciri gritted her teeth as the time passed. How long had she been kneeling? An hour, maybe longer. And still there wasn't a hint of sound. No knock, no cough, not even a shuffle from the God King. Perhaps it was a test to see how long she would remain as she was. Perhaps she was just reading too much into things. Either way, she forced herself to remain in place, shifting only when she absolutely had to. Vivenna had the training. Vivenna had the poise and the refinement. But Ciri, she had the stubbornness. One only had to look back at her history of repeatedly ignoring lessons and duties to appreciate that. With time, she'd even broken down her father. He'd started letting her do as she pleased, if only to save his own sanity. And so she continued to wait, naked in the light of the coals, as the night wore on. Fireworks sprayed sparks upward in a fountain of light. Some fell close to where Lightsong was sitting, and these blazed with an extra frenzied light until they died away. He reclined on a couch in the open air, watching the display. Servants waited around him, complete with parasols, a portable bar, steaming and chilled towels to rub his face and hands, should he feel the need, and a host of other luxuries that, to Lightsong, were simply commonplace. He watched the fireworks with mild interest. The firemasters stood in a nervous cluster near his position. Beside them were a troupe of minstrels that Lightsong had called for, but hadn't yet asked to perform. While there were always entertainers in the court of gods for the returned to enjoy, this night, the wedding night of their god-king, was even more extravagant. Sesebron wasn't in attendance himself, of course. Such festivities were beneath him. Lightsong glanced to the side, where the king's palace rose soberly above the court. Eventually, Lightsong just shook his head and turned his attention back to the courtyard. The palaces of the gods formed a ring, and each building had a patio below and a balcony above, both facing the central area. Lightsong sat a short distance from his patio, out amidst the lush grass of the expansive courtyard. Another fire fountain sprayed into the air, throwing shadows across the courtyard. Lightsong sighed, accepting another fruit drink from a servant. The night was cool and pleasant, fit for a god. Or gods. Lightsong could see others set up in front of their palaces. Different groups of performers cluttered the sides of the courtyard, waiting for their chance to please one of the returned. The fountain ran low, and the firemasters looked toward him, smiling hopefully in the torchlight. Lightsong nodded with his best benevolent expression. More fire.